Hey, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of What the Hell Am I Doing? All right, today's episode is about religion. And let's start off posing a question, which is, you know, what do you worship in life? And this doesn't have to be necessarily in a completely, you know, organized, like from the angle of organized religion, or, you know, spirituality or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is that everyone in the world has something that they worship, right? Again, doesn't mean that you necessarily, you know, have certain religious rituals, although I would say that you do from like a sociological perspective, you do have rituals that you carry out for the things that you worship, right? I'll give you an example of what I mean. If you think about, you know, atheists, a lot of atheists who don't believe in God, right? Or don't believe in the existence of God, or don't really care much for organized religion. Well, I mean, that in a sense, within that context, is what you worship, right? You worship the idea that there is no God. Obviously, God as defined by you. And when you expand this to life in general, you realize that there are all sorts of things that we worship in this world, right? That together formulate our individualized religions that help us understand the world. Science is a religion, if you really think about it, right? Another way that you can think about, because I know, you know, there's a certain connotation that is associated with the word or the term religion. Or, you know, religious terms like God and deities, and even, you know, to a certain extent, spirituality. I think a better way to think about religion is as a framework, right? Everyone has frameworks for things. Frameworks, if you really just break down the word, literally, it's just a frame through which you're able to understand how things work. I'm sure that, you know, the etymology isn't exactly that, but you get what I mean, right? A framework is just sort of, it really is your understanding of how things work. That's it at the end of the day, right? And we use frameworks in all sorts of things. Methods are frameworks, right? Methods, a step-by-step method for how to, a recipe, for example, let's say, right? A recipe is a framework for making a certain dish, right? And you have all sorts of frameworks. You have all sorts of recipes for what might be the same conceptual dish, right? If it's spaghetti and meatballs, there's all sorts of frameworks through which you could interpret that dish, right? If you wanted to be super traditional, maybe you'd have the spaghetti. Maybe you'd make the spaghetti by hand. Maybe you'd make the sauce on your own with the meatballs. You know, they might be like half pork, half beef, or all pork, or whatever. You know, whatever. Again, it depends on the framework, right? If you think about how you dress, right, your style, that is a framework. It's a framework that's built around a certain ideal of what looks good on you, right? Everything in this world has a framework, right? And when you bring it down to the personal level, everyone has their own frameworks for viewing different things about the world. All the things that they teach you in school are sort of frameworks, right? If you think about writing an essay, and the five paragraph essay, and how you have, you know, the introductory and conclusion paragraph, and then you have the three supporting paragraphs, and each paragraph is supposed to have three supporting points, blah, 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 and you have evidence for each of the supporting points, and so on and so forth. These are frameworks, right? Now, why is this so important? I think the thing about understanding that the world is made up of frameworks, and that your perception of reality is built around a framework, and knowing that everyone has their own framework, right, helps you to understand, a multitude of things. But at least for me, one thing that as I started to understand that there's no, you know, singular framework for understanding any phenomenon in this world, right? There's multiple interpretive structures, if you want to call that. There's multiple frameworks for understanding the significance of anything that happens in life. And especially when you look at life in general and the framework with which we look at how to lead our lives, right? What kind of career you should have? What should you be focusing on? What you should be spending on? How you should be saving up your money? How you should be using, like, all these sorts of things. For me, one thing I realize is that, you know, when I was younger, and I'm sure a lot of people experience this too, is that, you know, your parents, they instill within you certain values, let's say, right? And they give you their frameworks, essentially. I mean, I think that's sort of what the responsibility of parents is to do, right? The idea is to raise, you know, children and help them manage the world, essentially, how to navigate the world. And how do you navigate the world? Well, you have certain frameworks that help you to understand the world and help you to find your way through the world. But the thing is that at some point you start to realize that there are certain limitations in your parents' frameworks, right? One, I mean, their frameworks are built on their understanding of the world, and they came up, you know, at a slightly different time. Even though they are humans, but they came up in different times. They had different certain external factors that they were dealing with, different technologies, for example, right? Cultures were different back then. So it's slightly obsolete, right? And then on top of that too, as you start to experience more of the world and as you get more exposure to how the world, you know, all the different facets of the world and just how intriguing people are and how unique everyone's perspectives are, on you know, even just the same subject, then you start to realize that your parents don't really, like, your parents' perspective, your parents' frameworks, the frameworks that they have passed on to you, right? Their values, let's call them, are unique to them. And they're only just one out of millions and billions of possible ways of looking at the world and understanding the world, right? And it's, I do think to a certain extent that it's a mistake for you to believe that your parents' beliefs about the world and your parents' understandings about the world are objectively true, right? I think there's a tendency for this to happen, right? This, I think, is what why a lot of people value tradition, let's say, right? Because they're very focused they favor, you know, beliefs, values, and all that, practices from the past, right? And they favor the preservation of those practices, and you know, whether or not they're useful or effective or true is beside the point. I think the idea here that I'm talking about when it comes to frameworks and religion and beliefs and all that is, at some point you have to, kind of like what I was saying in previous episodes about figuring out whose game you're playing, right? Whose frameworks are you using right now? Whose understanding of the world do you really is shaping your perception of reality, right? Because, you know, if you don't take the time to stop and wonder, is my framework correct? Does my framework work for me? Is this, you know, who is the real true author of the way in which I see this world? And that's not to say that, like, your parents just, you know, out of the blue, just in this cut section of the history of humanity, developed their own unique perspective on the world, right? Of course, their perspectives were, I'm sure, highly informed by their own parents, and their parents informed their worldview, and so on and so forth, right? So a lot of this is kind of that aspect of tradition that's being passed down. But then, you know, it's not to say that you should take a full departure from what has already been determined as the correct way of understanding the world. But then you too have a role or responsibility as the latest in your generation to build upon that worldview. Because, you know, that worldview wasn't perfect, right? Obviously, it wasn't set up for, you know, imagine if you were thinking about the way in which you think about the world now in 2022 versus how your parents must have felt at your age, right? 20, 30 years ago, and how they came up with their worldview. And then the same thing for their parents. Like, they're different times, right? There's different considerations. They didn't have to think about things like smartphones and AI and all these sorts of things. And so where am I going with this? Well, I'm not entirely sure. But I guess one of the points I want to make is that, and again, this depends on your own worldview and your own framework for seeing the world and how you think about things like religion. But, you know, before you go about, if you are someone who would, you know, be quick to dismiss the importance and role of religion in the world, is that you yourself have a religion. Everyone has a religion, right? Everyone worships something. You think about, if you think about movie stars, like, what, you know, are, do we not worship movie stars? Do we not have idols and heroes that we worship? You know, these are all things that are akin to that, and really no different, if you think about it, than the gods that were worshipped by ancient cultures, and even the gods that are worshipped by today's cultures and religions, right? I mean, you know, what exactly, it's not so much what a god is to you, but, or what the term means to you necessarily, but what is the role that it serves, right? What is the function that it plays in your life? And I think for a lot of people who are, let's say, anti-religious, right, the kind of paradox that I can see in that is that, well, if you are an atheist, let's say, if you don't believe in God, one of your ideals or one of your values, you could say, is the fact that God doesn't exist, right? And so kind of paradoxically, I mean, that is one of your, I don't know if you want to say it, call it a God necessarily, but it's something that you worship. You worship this idea, right, that gods don't exist, or that religion is pointless, right? And this, you know, is just one component of your framework. Because, you know, if you look beyond the tangible facets of what makes a religion, if you look beyond all the stereotypical, you know, aspects of organized religion, and all these rituals and like places of worship and stuff like that, and if you really think about what the concept of religion actually is and the purpose that it serves in people's lives, right? Religion is there to help people orient themselves, much in the same way that science is there to help us orient ourselves, right? And to think that science is no different from it is any different from religion is to ignore the fact that even science has its own philosophical underpinnings. It's not like science just existed and we discovered it after, you know, mistakenly stumbling around with religion. It's like science has its own assumptions that you must make in order for it to actually make sense and be true. Right? So you think about ontology and epistemology, you know, understanding the way in which knowledge actually emerges, right? Ontology, the study of being, how do we know things exist, right? And these are things that people don't really think about when they're talking about scientific methods and science backed and blah, 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 right? We take that to be a proxy or to be, you know, synonymous with like facts. But facts themselves don't really mean anything until we utilize those facts. We sort of weaponize them in a sense, and we take information and we use that information to help guide us in our decision making and what we should be doing in the world. And religion is no different from that. I mean, that is what religion is for, and that's what science is for, right? Science isn't there to tell you what to do. Science is just one framework, one very large expansive framework for understanding the world. That's all it is, right? And to say that one is more true than the other, I think is you're comparing apples and oranges here, because I think the purposes of science and religion, yes, at large, you might say that science is there to help steer us in the right direction, objectively speaking, but I think the difference between science and organized religion, let's say, or more psychologically based religions, or more spiritually based religions, let's say, is that they look at specific parts of the tangible, material, physical world, right? Because the world just has so many different, again, so many different ways of looking at it. Anyway, why am I rambling on about religion and science and all that? You know, I'm not entirely sure, but I think part of it is just, if you're someone who is, you know, within the context of entrepreneurship as a journey of self-exploration, one of the things that I think you need to, but you inevitably end up understanding about life is that there's no one way of looking at things, right? Clearly, evidently, you look at like a lot of political systems. You look at the US, for example, and you see how divided they are. Clearly, there's more than one way of looking at the same issue. But the more that you come to understand that, right? Because I think there's one, on the one hand, I think people are very cognizant of the fact that there are multiple ways to look at one issue or situation or you know, matter, subject matter. On the other hand, a lot of people acknowledge this, but they label anything other than their own perspective as being wrong or incorrect, right? Because according to their framework, right, it just doesn't make sense, right? If you think about something as controversial as, you know, abortions, right? Abortion policy, you know, who should be the one to decide whether or not they want to have the baby? And like, so, you know, there's all sorts of perspectives on that and stances that someone can take. A lot of people want to argue that the other person is wrong and that their angle is right. Their stance on the issue is right, right? And the other people think the same way. But I think it's important to, this is kind of a contradiction, but to be willing to hear out other people about about their perspectives, about how they see things, right? And this is really related to empathy and the role of empathy, just in life in general, which is that I think you have to, rather than being not stuck in your ways, but kind of stubborn to the extent that you aren't willing to listen to anyone else's point of view, you sort of have to be willing to take a step back, not necessarily yield your perspective, right? Or completely modify your perspective just because someone tells you that it's wrong. But just being willing to, you know, stop focusing so much on why you're right and trying just to understand why the other person thinks they're right. You know, I think in today's, you know, as a guy, at least, I'll tell you this much, that as a guy, I think one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of guys make or that, you know, that a lot of people in society say that guys should be doing is this idea that you should be very, you know, kind of like that Steve McQueen quote, right? Like, I live for myself and I answer to no one, in the sense that, like, I don't need to care about anyone else's opinions. I don't need to, you know, take time to understand what anyone else is saying, right? That as a guy, I need to establish my boundaries. I need to be, you know, very firm, right? Rule with an iron fist and don't leave any room for, you know, flexibility or anything like that. I think that at least growing up, that was sort of part of the narrative of what it meant to be a man, right? Or what it means to be a man. And I think still for a lot of people, that's kind of the superficial perception of what, you know, pure masculinity is supposed to be, right? I think on a superficial level, that's what a lot of people think about when they hear about stoicism and being a stoic man and being a man who lives for himself.
And I, while I think there is a lot of power and a lot of, not just power, but a lot of strength, right, in having that kind of, in acting in that kind of way, in wanting to be right, not necessarily just objectively, but, you know, having that strength of self-belief, right, and that conviction in whatever it is that that you are pursuing. I think, yes, that's right to say. But, you know, if you find yourself in some kind of debate, in some kind of conversation with someone who doesn't necessarily share the same opinion as you do, or the same beliefs and values as you do about a certain issue, right? Sometimes it's you know, even in a negotiation, let's say, right, it's worthwhile to take the time to try to understand where the other person is coming from, because you can't, I mean, you can if you want, but I don't know what the value is of going through life just being completely unwilling to listen to anyone who doesn't agree with what you have to say, right? One, I think it's very closed-minded to do that. And two, you know, as a result of being so closed-minded, I think you limit yourself to seeing what else is out there in the world that, you know, right now might not necessarily align with your worldview, your framework, right? But perhaps it's something that you might find actually sits well with you, you know, a certain idea that sits well with you. You know, I think this is why I don't know what the percentage is. I think it's like actually as high as like 90% of people who buy self-help books are women. And I think a big part of that is simply because not so much that so many women buy self-help books, but virtually, you know, no guys buy self-help books. Very few men, I think, are willing to really try to find ways to improve themselves, right? Or find ways to seek to amend their frameworks, their views of the world, and to try to make a better sense of their place in the world, right? There's that, I don't know if it's age old necessarily, but there's that saying that men don't ask for directions. And I think that really is kind of part of what I'm getting at here with this idea of frameworks is, you know, once you start to understand that everyone has their own frameworks, and not just that everyone has their own frameworks, but certain people, you know, for them, you know, their frameworks might work better for a situation than the framework that you might come up with, right? That's why we have, you know, classes that are taught by these professors. A lot of, you know, what's the term? I don't remember the right, there's a specific term for the kinds of, you know, instructors or professors who have practical experience. But a lot of these people who have actually done what it is that they're teaching about, right? Not just professors who like studied it and wrote a thesis on it, and now they're teaching it in at a university. But the reason why we like, you know, like master classes, for example, why master classes are so valued, especially with famous people who are famous for doing those specific things that they're teaching, it's because they have a specific framework that clearly seems to have worked, right? And while you might not necessarily need the entire framework, or the entire framework might not exactly work, you know, for you, like might not fit like a glove, there are specific parts of that framework that might help you, right? That you can take with you and modify or adapt to your own framework to help you make better sense of the world and help you achieve your goals in the world, the things that you're after, right? Anything that you are sort of apprenticing for in life, you know, if it's in a certain job or something like that, right? You're always learning frameworks from other people, best practices from other people that helps you to that just helps to inform your own strategy and helps you to become better, right? But as a man, like I think first you have to be open to recognizing that maybe your framework isn't perfect, because quite frankly, it probably isn't. First off, right? No one's framework is perfect. No system is ever perfect. That's the thing, because time always, you know, keeps advancing, keeps moving. And so frameworks are only good for a certain period of time, and they have to continue to be updated. That's one thing. And at the same time too, once you understand, there's another point I wanted to make, but once you understand that your framework isn't perfect, and you're willing to hear out other people on their perspectives and frameworks, and they don't have to necessarily be on controversial situations, right? It could just be something as simple as learning how to write, right? And people have their certain frameworks or practices or techniques. And as you just kind of sift through all these things and try out all these frameworks and just have what other people hear what other people have to say, right? Then that helps you to, well, first it gives you a benchmark for your own framework, but it also helps you to think about what are ways in which I can improve my framework, right? Now, there was something else that I wanted to mention that ties back to the original reason, the original question I posed, right? Which is, you know, what is it that you worship in this world? What do you worship? And I guess ultimately, by asking yourself that question, forces you to really think about, you know, what is it that you're actually after? And is that something that you yourself want for yourself, right? Because, you know, depending on the level of influence that your parents had on the way in which you see the world, right? What you worship might not necessarily be what you actually want, right? What you worship, the things that you worship could be influenced by your friends, could be influenced by your family, right? Because these are things that they worship, right? If, you know, maybe your peers worship having a nice car, having a specific kind of car, right? Maybe having a specific like sports car or something in mind or whatnot. Is that something necessary that you worship? Do you worship having a nice, you know, fancy job title with a Fortune 500 company? Do you worship having a university degree? Do you worship dressing a certain way, right? Or living in a certain place, or having, you know, these certain aspects that reflect, that are associated with who you are and your identity. And it's not to second guess how it is that you're living life, but to constantly just be questioning, you know, whose values am I using to guide myself in life, right? Who's really at the helm of my ship? And I think the more that you know, especially within the game of entrepreneurship and trying to start your own business, I think the more that you go through this journey, the more you start to realize and uncover who you really are, right? Because there's no one else there. You know, if you're not in a company where you have to align by someone else's values, you're not in a team where you have to sort of acquiesce or you know, work well, mesh well with all the other people on the team, and especially your boss, right? You know, when you are starting your own business, you are responsible for really setting the conditions and setting the tone and the mood for how business is going to be conducted on that team. And so you have to figure out what it is you worship, and if that's something that you truly believe is worth worshiping. So anyway, it's almost 30 minutes. So if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Hopefully this imparts some piece of value for you, something insightful. And we'll talk to you later. Peace.